Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time.
The best there is, best there was, and the best there ever will be. And you know it.
With a tear in my eye.
The queen of the crop.
Acknowledge me.
Episode 365 of Top Rope Nation. It's the AEW Full Gear Review and Reaction Pod. It's Sunday morning. No beer this morning. I got my coffee. I'm ready to go. Justin Joint, how you doing this morning?
I'm all hopped up on coffee and cinnamon toast crunch. I'm ready to go. Let's get going before I start singing Let's Build a Snowman Again.
If you guys were in our green room before we started, it was Justin singing the Frozen soundtrack, which was quite the way to start my Sunday morning. I literally cut him off. I'm like, all right, Justin, I'm cutting you off. And I went to the countdown for the intro.
Don't get it twisted, though. Ryan knew more of the lyrics than I did.
That is true. That is true. Girl dads know. Girl dads know. Jesse Velasquez sporting his home state of Minnesota on his head right now. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing really well. Now, I'm going to real quick channel MVP. Now, we don't take questions from net nerds.
I mean, we'll take your questions. Super chats are open.
Oh, I need to watch that entire presser just for him alone.
I didn't have a chance. I mean, I saw some of the clips on social, but I didn't have a chance to watch the post show last night at all. Oh no, my kids are screaming in the next room. See, this is what you get with these morning pods, you guys, but we're doing it for you. We got the kids scrambling around the house. Hopefully we got some of our British friends here in the chat. John Hope, I think, is here already, isn't he?
Yeah, buddy.
Leaves his plants. There we go. There's your blue sky reference. Did you guys see that sign last night?
Of course.
That was outstanding.
Fantastic.
Followed that person on blue sky right away.
Oh yeah, leaves his plants. Hangman Adam Page, get on Blue Sky. That's where we are doing most of our skeeting these days, as it is called.
Is that the term we've come down with?
About a year ago, before the site really took off, it became skeeting was the phrase. So it's skeeting, whether they want it to be skeeting or not. We're skeeting.
Insert little John
Sweat
in there.
Down my balls.
That's right.
Ski, ski, ski.
You guys, if you watch Full Gear, this is just going to become a Frozen pod with a little skeeting on the side. So if you that's something that you like, we'll be skeeting into the snow this morning. So just hit us up.
Oh God! All right,
let us know how hard your ice is in the days of frozen. I gotta stop. You guys, let us know what you thought of Full Gear. Give us your grade A through F in the chat right now as we get started. And this is what we always do. Going back several years on Top Rope Nation, we grade it on the A through F scale. Justin Joint, you've had not quite 12 hours to think about this. What are you grading Full Gear 2024?
So this is the big conundrum: is how do you evaluate something that you know personally you enjoyed more than others, and how much does the crowd factor into that? Because, you know, for me, this show is easily an A, and I think this show could have been an A plus if it had been your usual AEW crowd. It was not that. It almost every single time it took an entire match for the crowd to get invested. Now, myself, I was really into all the stories they were telling coming into this show. So I was already invested. And I think I also was just in the perfect mindset for sitting down and watching wrestling last night for whatever reason. And so once we got past the first two matches, it was, I mean, excuse my language, it was all bangers after that, in my opinion, with minimal criticisms. So I'm going to go with an A because, you know, to your criteria, Ryan, is there stuff I want to go back and rewatch on this show? Yes, definitely one, possibly two to three other matches I want to go back and rewatch. But I was entertained top to bottom. No real big complaints other than I think the crowd just did not bring it last night.
Jesse, counterpoint, or are you in agreement?
You're going to talk me into a higher grade by the end of the show. That's for sure. I decided last night to just right before I go to sleep, said that this was the second worst pay-per-view of AEW's year. Now, with adding more context into it, Revolution, Dynasty, All Out, Wrestle Dream.
No.
We're all, okay. I was going to say majority of those were all A shows. Double or Nothing, I felt, was the lowest, and I felt that this was a little bit better than that. So, right now, I'm giving it a B. I might elevate it to a B plus by the end of the show. Honestly, the first two matches dropped this grade for me a lot, like a lot. I felt that other than Jake Hager and Dustin Rhodes at Revolution 2020, the opener last night was the worst opener in AEW pay per view history. And then I think everything else from, as Justin said, from match three to the bottom was good, very good, and excellent. So They set such a high bar that I don't feel that they reached that high bar from earlier this year.
That's fair, I think. I'll be a little higher than you, but I agree. My grade would be dropped from the first two matches for sure. The MJF match, we'll talk about it, just really lacked something. The tag match was just pretty much just a TV match. I thought you could have for sure left some matches off of this card. I mean, I know they did cut it. You know, it was a little bit shorter than some of the main shows have been. But that being said, I'll go A minus. I'll let it drop me to an A minus because I did think after the first two that it was really, really good. There was stuff I would rewatch. There was a match of the year contender, you know, based on my criteria usually on the show. So it's got a match of the year contender. It's usually pushing the A level for me as long as the rest of the show is fairly strong. And I thought the rest of the show was pretty damn strong. I'm going to have some nitpicks here and there for sure. Go ahead, Justin.
I agree with you guys about the first two matches, but I think we're being a little harsh depending on how much you're, lowering your grade because of 30 minutes. It was just 30 minutes. And I guess part of that is, you know, to Jesse's point, is kind of our expectations for AEW pay-per-views and Tony usually being pretty good about what he sends out there first. And that just wasn't the case here. And a big part of that is just, I think most fans have zero investment in Private Party. Mm-hmm. And to your guys' point, it was definitely a TV match and it was just your usual multi-man nonsense. But I'm not going to dock this pay-per-view too much just because of 30 minutes.
I also felt that, and we'll get to this later, I felt there was a couple matches later in the show that were, again, good, but not great. So, again, I would, once we get into it, we'll go further.
Let's hit some of the chat room here. We've got Andrew checking in with his score. Andrew gives it a B, said would have been an A, but the post-match was way too much. The close of the show there, we'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. John checking in. He's at the B-plus to A-minus range. Just finished watching it 2 minutes ago. Let's see. We got Carl checking in. Carl was actually going to be, I didn't tell you guys this, he was going to be on the show with us, but he woke up feeling not too well. So we'll get Carl on soon. But Carl is checking in via text here, and he says the crowd was very poor, and that's not the first time that has been said. At some point, you have to ask, is it the crowd's fault, or is it the promotion not doing a good enough job? B minus for me. And then he went on to say, as an additional point, my grade is beyond the in-ring action. It factors in the anticipation going in and coming out. Okay. Well, I think we'll start with the main event here in just a second, but before we do, couple of housekeeping items, you guys. If you are not already subscribed here on the channel, please do. Also, if you're watching right now on YouTube, hit the like button. The more likes this video gets, the better it will be for us. And of course, if you want to support us, the number one way is to become a patron. Starting at $5 a month, you get access to all of our bonus shows, 160 plus bonus shows. We've got one on Survivor Series 92 coming here in about a week and a half or so that I think you guys are really going to want to hear. So get signed up in time to hear that one, plus all the classics. Jesse just dropped a TRN Unplugged the other day that previewed Full Gear that was really good. We got TRN Extras. And also, if you're not in our Facebook group, you might not know, but we started a new merch shop, which I'm really liking so far. I got my first samples the other day. I sent the guys a picture. I got a rocks glass with the TRN logo on it, and it was super high quality. I was very impressed. Very heavy glass. It's not going to break. The logo on it is thick. And I got a shirt coming too, which will be here soon, and I'll let you guys know on that. But if you're a patron, I made a code that's permanent. So everybody that's a patron can get 20% off on the merch store. There's a post up with the code in it all the time. Basically gets you our merch for cost. I'm not looking to profit off of you guys. Just looking for you guys to get some of our swag and to wear it to wrestling events, you know, or whatever you want to do. So I had a buddy the other day who ordered over $100 worth of merch from our shop, and the profit on that was about $4. So just to tell you how close I got that coupon code to cost for you. So if you're a patron, you're basically going to get our stuff for cost. So check that out. The merch store is really cool. It's linked on the Patreon page and in the Facebook group, or you can get to it by going to topropenation.com and navigating over to the merch section. And of course, if you're listening on the podcast feeds, hit subscribe, leave us a 5-star. All that stuff helps us out. No cost for you to do that, and it'll help us greatly. We really, really appreciate it. All right. Yeah, let's start with Mox and Orange Cassidy in the main event, because I thought that was one of the more divisive points I saw on social media, is people either liking the ending or really disliking the ending. Talked about this on the BR show last night a little bit. What did you guys think of all of the guys running out, you know, after the finish of the match, where, of course, you know, no surprise, Moxley retained. We can talk about the match itself next, but Justin, what did you think of the ending with, you know, getting Christian out there, getting Jay White out there, getting Hangman out there, Darby eventually outside the building? What did you make of all that?
I think it was a combination of confusing and pretty entertaining, just because of how chaotic it was. You know, when Hangman came out as a real head scratcher, but also at the same time, it was like, wait, is he joining? Is he going to try and become the next challenger, considering he's on a bit of a losing streak? So there's questions there, which, you know, that led into Christian trying to cash in and Jay White making the save, which that was kind of weird, because doesn't everybody hate Mox and just, you know, let Christian take the title? But at the same time, you're trying to build up Jay White as a babyface, so he should be out there to stop someone that everybody loves to boo in Christian. And then going into everything with Darby, I thought that was pretty freaking sweet too, and pretty cool way to end the show with that shot with him on top of the truck, which, and by all accounts, he was the stunt driver for that car. That he actually did crash it into that truck. So I thought it was fun. You know, I hate to criticize it too much, getting into the weeds and being like, well, this doesn't make sense, and that's all fair, because I already said it's kind of confusing, but for the most part, I enjoyed it.
Jesse.
It was a lot to take in. I said that last night. It was like, whoa. I don't know if there should have been a little taken out, because it just, again, just from the end with Hangman running out, and we have no withheld reason or why. And then Christian coming out there, of course, that made sense. He wants the championship. Jay White has had a feud with Christian Cage and the Patriarchy for a while now. That all makes sense. Mox's group, the Death Riders, get away. Darby comes back there. I mean, this did feel kind of WCW-esque to me, but I did enjoy it. I'll definitely go there. I think, again, the one thing I'm really, really curious about, and I had been since the match ended, was Hangman Page, the direction of where he's going. So that's what I'm going to be kind of tuned into the next couple of weeks, because I think I know where the rest of this is going. And I'm also curious with Darby too, just because he suffered a loss to Claudio on Wednesday night that shocked me. I was convinced that Darby was going to be the one to win, and I thought he was going to be eventually groomed for an AEW world title, which is that still can happen. But again, there's just a lot of questions. We need answers. They're going to give it to us though.
Just for the record, it's not like Hangman coming out there was completely out of nowhere. I know a lot of people like to really go back into the archives and connect the dots with stories, you know, especially with WWE. Hangman and Mox have a long history. You know, they had an absolutely phenomenal Texas Death Match. Was at Revolution 23, I believe. That was fantastic. So it's not like, you know, there's no way of connecting those dots.
And Hangman, when he came back, and it was about a month before Full Gear 21, it was down to him and Moxley to climb that ladder to get that casino chip. So there were things building from there. Yeah, there's definitely a built-in beef there.
Yeah, I thought it was definitely something you would see on TV more so than a pay-per-view, it felt like. It felt like an ending to Dynamite. That said, like you said, Jesse, it was entertaining. I thought when Hangman came out, I was wondering why. Like the thought went through my mind, is he going to join the group, Death Riders? Was that where we're going here? Because given the fact that he had lost to Jay White for the second pay-per-view in a row, you're like, he can't be the next guy challenging Mox. That doesn't make any sense. You know, and then when Jay came out and then Christian, all that, of course, that made sense. And then Darby, we've got this kind of slow burn going where I think eventually you get to Mox and Darby, but I don't think that's going to happen until probably like Revolution at the earliest. We can talk about who we think would challenge Mox at the next pay-per-view, but it seems like Jay White makes the most sense. I mean, he's coming off of pretty strong booking the last two pay-per-views. So he's right there. They put him front and center there with Mox at the end. So I would think Jay White's where you go for World's End.
Agree.
Yeah, I mean, they're setting up the future there. It's fine. I did think that closing shot, Justin, to your point, with Darby was pretty awesome. I did not know. I had not seen that he did actually drive the car. That's insane, but not surprised.
He's borderline a stuntman anyway, so be it if he's comfortable with it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure that they weren't just like, Darby, get in that car and go crash into it. I'm sure there was, you know, safety guidelines in place. You know, I'm sure they had to have done a test run of some sort.
Yeah, Carl's commenting on that, so I'll throw that in. He said the ending was out there for sure, a bit overdone, not going to go off on it aside from Darby driving the car, which is complete stupidity and speaks to a wider problem of TK not saying no. I mean, I probably wouldn't let him do it personally. Like, I know you're gonna want to do this, but dude, you're not driving that car. That is crazy. But it was a hell of an ending. It was. Yeah, I don't know, John. I don't think Darby at World. I think that's too soon. I think you got to have the slow burn. Like you mentioned, he took the L recently to Claudio, Jesse. So I think this is going to be one of those things where he's chasing after him, getting the fans to beg for the match. And then eventually you get there. And like we've said on the show, like Justin, you've been pretty adamant that Darby's going to be the guy to beat Mox for the title. It's looking more and more like the way TV has been playing out that is the case. Yeah, I'm shooting for Revolution on that. But what did you guys think of the match with Cassidy? Because this is the third time now in about the last 14, 15 months these guys have had a pay-per-view match. Two of them headliners. We were there for one of them at All Out 23 in the headline spot. And then they ran it back at WrestleDream last year. And so they had split those matches, you know, with Cassidy taking the loss first. Then he got the win. Last night, no surprise, he took the L. The match itself, Justin, how did you make that out?
I loved it. I thought it was exactly what it needed to be. You know, speaking of those previous matches, there's no denying these two have chemistry. And then when you actually add in a solidified babyface versus a solidified heel, that just added to it for me. Because all the previous ones, Mox was more in that tweener role than in actually a pure heel. You know, the way the match started off with Orange immediately going after him with those orange punches was fantastic. Mox looked super strong, and few guys in this entire industry do the fiery babyface comeback stuff better than Orange Cassidy. And we had many moments with that. And one of the absolute best near falls in AEW history, where even though we all basically knew Mox was winning this match, a lot of people, including myself, bit that near fall where Orange hit him with the briefcase. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was almost pitch perfect. The only way I dock it is just kind of that Yuta knee coming out of nowhere, and that being the finish would be my only nitpick.
Yeah.
I think this was my second favorite match on the show. I would agree. Yeah, because there's a couple others in contention for it too, though. No, from the jump, when you could see it when they were in, Justin Roberts was announcing John Moxley. I saw Orange in the background kind of holding the ring rope, like getting ready to charge. And as soon as they said John Moxley, just runs out of the corner, one, two, three, knocks him out of the ring. Then they go start brawling around the announce table, and he starts getting the edge there. And Moxley just looked shocked. Orange was just on this absolute just terror of just this path of rage, I guess we'll call it. So it's really cool to see some fire. I mean, Orange, his character, he knows when to turn it on. Mm-hmm. And that's something he's proved himself, I felt, since his international title run, that he should be in this spot at some point in time. The sad thing is, from the time he lost the belt to Roderick Strong at Revolution to now, we kind of forgot about it because he wasn't really pushed to the forefront. So I would have liked to have seen more in between there. But that being said, match was very good. Again, like you said, I think Orange might be the most sympathetic babyface in that promotion. I mean, I'd say like Hangman, when he's a babyface, is up there, but
Darby
as well. Yeah. So with that being said, yeah, excellent main event. Briefcase 2.99, Mox with a tremendous kick out. You could see the kind of just his eyes bulge out of his head, and he just sinks right back into the mat. Tremendous stuff.
I like this John Hope comment. Make sure you post that, Ryan.
The bottom one?
The one he just posted, the ending. I think he's spot on there.
He said the ending was only a few minutes long, really. The NWO entrances used to take longer than the whole ending sequences. True. That's true. This is the only one holding up my grades for the show for our patrons. I always post my star ratings, and I've kind of been going back and forth on how I'm going to grade this one. I really mm-hmm. liked it in the moment. I feel like I need to rewatch it almost to give it an accurate grade. I got all the rest done. This one, to me, it is coming in as either the second best or third best match of the night, to Jesse's point. Probably third for me. I did like the women's one, I think, a little bit better.
Oh, yeah, good call.
But it was, I mean, it's right there. And I have the score for it, or the star rating, like really close to the women's match right now. So it was excellent. I thought the match was laid out pretty much perfectly with Orange being the underdog and right away trying to stun him with the victory with the orange punches out of nowhere, you know, using the briefcase. I thought the blood added a lot to this match. Just the desperation out of Cassidy, just because, I mean, everybody that knows this, you think he has no shot going in. And the fact that that whole arena bit on that near fall is a testament to the guys that they got them believing that maybe, just maybe, this guy could win. And I mean, I did too, even. And I never would have picked Cassidy going in, but it was such a late kick out too. Moxley did a great job timing that kick out. That was all fantastic. So yeah, this was a really good match. Those guys brought it. Cassidy yet again proving that he deserves to be up there at the top of the card, whether he's an undersized guy. You see him next to Moxley, and he's a lot smaller. But, man, the fans love him, and he always comes through in these spots. He always does, and this is good stuff.
The one and only match with blood also. Orange is the one that got cut. Well-timed. Everything was just extremely well-played in this night with the Death Rider to the steps and instant blade job. Awesome.
Yeah.
This time of year, a good hoodie is absolutely essential. And the American Giant Classic Full Zip Hoodie is made to last a lifetime. With timeless style, heavyweight fleece, and durable details, you can depend on it for years to come. Snag the hoodie that will bring you comfort for life, the American Giant Classic Full Zip, and save 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use code CLASSIC24 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com. Code CLASSIC24.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Just putting up some comments here. I agree with a lot of the chat is saying here.
I kind of like what they're doing right now, and this could change, you know, by Wednesday. But the fact that Mox has this reputation as the juice guy, the one who's going to bleed, and the fact that so far he has not in this current heel run where he's playing this big boss, I kind of hope they continue that and he does not bleed until that last match where he loses the title. You know, it's like it'll be that Rocky moment where – you know, the Russian is bleeding. He's cut. You know, he's human, you know.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's move on. We're going to have to start moving through these matches so we don't go 4 hours. But some of these we can hit pretty quickly. Like in the semi-main spot, they had Lashley taking on Swerve. And I thought this was a really good one, too. I mean, this is not your match of the year contender type match, but I think you had to put over Lashley. This is kind of the story of this show, is there was a couple of guys that had to take L's, I think, just for the continuity of the stories they're telling, or to make you take certain people, as we'll get to later, seriously. And yeah, you're going to have to beat some of your cornerstone guys, but those guys are made guys. They're going to be fine. Swerve Strickland's been world champion, so he had to take the loss here. You have to put over Lashley just coming into the promotion, and they did. Now, I think Lashley, if you were to watch this match and you went back and you watched some of his WWE stuff, you know, from 15 years ago or whatever, he's so much better now, despite being older. And I thought that this was just a great hard hitting match with the correct finish. They went 13 and a half minutes. Jesse, let me go to you first. What'd you like about this match?
Well, for starters, Lashley's a former world champion himself in a couple of promotions. So, I mean, you got two world champions going at it, or of world championship caliber. And I know that he had the 2-on-1 handicap match on Wednesday night, but I feel this was his debut. And this was the only way that you could do it, was to have arguable one of probably your 2 to 3 most protected talents put him over. And I Swerve was probably more than happy to do so. And he did get some considerable offense in. Got Shelton Benjamin getting kicked out mid-match as well, trying to interfere. So they're still, of course, they're trying to be the dastardly heels and cheat. But, I mean, ultimately, Bobby Lashley doesn't need it. So, no, I thought this was a really good way to introduce him. And I think I'll tie into a main point later when we hit on Will Ospreay and Kyle Fletcher.
All right, Justin.
It's kind of my theme of the show. You know, once we got past those two opening matches, is this is exactly what it needed to be. To your, you know, to both your guys' points, you know, Lashley had to win this. My assumption was it was going to be through outside interference, but I was A-okay with the way they structured this match, with Swerve just continually working from underneath, trying to, you know, get the advantage on this wrecking ball of a human being, was just note perfect in my opinion. And I've never really even been the biggest Bobby Lashley fan, but you know, he's brand new to the company, and you got to display him as a monster, especially in the first match. Swerve's a made man. He's not going to be hurt by this loss. This is match one of what will probably be a trilogy. So I had no problems with the outcome of it. And I just think, like I said, structurally, I thought it was perfect.
The Swerve stomp through the table on the outside was awesome.
Oh, and the most important part of the match was, in my opinion, Lashley putting the full Nelson on Prince Nana afterwards to really get that heat. That was good stuff right there.
Yeah, and I see the chat talking about they thought maybe there would have been a new member coming in here, and Justin just took off for a second, but I was going to call out, I think Justin, I can't remember where he said this, if it was in the Facebook group or in our group text, but how awesome Ricky Starks would be in this stable. And Starks was backstage at the show last night. So when I had read, Justin, that Ricky Starks was backstage at the show, I was hoping that maybe he would be a new member of the group here.
Same here, man. Same here.
Didn't get that. Yeah.
More than anybody, I wish I knew what was going on with his contract. Because, you know, we're all really high on Ricky Starks. And as much as I think he would fit in seamlessly with WWE, boy, it sure would be nice to have, you know, one more homegrown AEW guy, you know, kind of reach the top with AEW.
Yeah.
And he would be it. I kind of liked your Ricky Starks being the Rock to Lashley's Farouk. Excellent like point there. Yeah. I mean, well, I guess now you can go watch Ricky Starks on December 14th against Matt Cardona at a GCW event. Because that was an interesting take, how he just strolls down the escalator with a shopping bag in hand, the only way Ricky Starks can. So, hello, Tony Khan. This guy has a ton of charisma, and I think I know why he's being held backstage, but it just really pisses me off.
Yeah, he would be great in the Hurt Syndicate, but so far, it's not happening. So, yeah, we got the finish with the Hurt Lock. Right finish, I think, given the situation right now. Did you guys notice on the ring gear that Swerve wore out? I think that was a picture of him from last year's match with Hangman at Full Gear.
I was curious as to what the heck that was, but apparently the internet figured it out. I don't think I would have figured that out in 100 years if you'd let me analyze it. But was it also some Misawa tribute tights too?
Green and white.
Yeah.
He had the mask in the very beginning too, so I'm assuming again that was probably from the Full Gear match last year.
Yeah. Let's talk about Takeshita and Ricochet, because this was one that underwhelmed me. I had higher expectations for this one, and I want to ask you guys something just about Ricochet in general, because you know we're excited about him coming in, freshening things up. He'd pretty much done whatever he was going to do in WWE. He'd been there for 6 years. You know, that's a long time in that promotion. 6 years flew by the way, but he'd been there a while. And Takeshita is a guy who we all like a lot. We were really happy that they put the international title on him, and I had high expectations for the match, and I didn't think it really lived up to him. I thought that this match was fine, about average, maybe slightly above average, but nothing too special. So my question is, did WWE ruin Ricochet? Because, you know, this is a guy who, before he went there, just to rewind, if you guys weren't watching wrestling around 2016, 2015, 2017, like in that period, he was one of the most anticipated free agents to arrive in WWE, because that was the only game in town at the top of the wrestling business at the time. But he was locked into this contract with Lucha Underground, and he couldn't sign with WWE for years. You know, he's working in Japan, and he was having the, you know, the famous match with Ospreay in 16 and Best of the Super Juniors and everything. And we were so jacked for this guy to get to WWE. A next level talent, generational talent, even was a label thrown around for Ricochet. And he goes to NXT, and he has that great intro match at NXT TakeOver in New Orleans in 2018 at the North American ladder match. And he had a pretty good NXT run, but then by the time he got to the main roster, he just lost something. I don't know. Like, there's nothing really that memorable about his time on the WWE main roster. Is that where he went wrong, Justin? Did the WWE mess up Ricochet?
I mean, maybe to an extent. He was firmly a mid-carder kind of from the jump. But also, I think it's more about he was undeniably the best high flyer in the business, at least in North America, for years going into WWE. But now, you know, there's a ton of them. You know, they've been sprouting like weeds ever since. You know, he's not even the top high flyer by, I think, a pretty wide margin in AEW right now. But also, I think he's always been missing something. You know, he's not all that charismatic on the mic. And when that's the case, and you consider his size, there's only going to be so much you can do with him. So it's a combination of things that have left us wanting when it comes to the Ricochet character and his history. But I think it's just more that there's just such an abundance of guys who can do what he does, and there being probably quite a few that can do even more than what he can do, especially now considering, you know, he's getting up there in age.
Go ahead, Jesse.
He stood out in World Wrestling Entertainment as well because there was nobody like him. Whereas, and Justin's comment about Speedball Mike Bailey going, just what AEW needs, another flippy guy. There you go. He fits in with Dante Martin. I mean, Rey Fénix is gone, but a commander, a hologram. I mean, they all can do what Ricochet can do. Osprey can still do certain things that Ricochet can do, even despite the fact he's put 30 to 35 pounds of muscle on in the course of that time, too. So I think it's just from a standalone act perspective, now he just fits in with all those guys. He's being categorized already. I think I said after the Wrestle Dream match, I said, well, that's the peak of Ricochet's career in AEW because he has nowhere to go but down. And I think my point's going to be proven here. Just because there are so many guys there that can do so many things, not just the high flyers, but also, like, we've already ran through about a half dozen names, and I could probably rattle off another 10 to 15. That I would rank over Ricochet in AEW. So he's peaked.
I completely agree with Carl is saying here. Jesse, earmuffs, close your eyes. Don't read this comment. Don't listen to what I'm about to say. But he is kind of the epitome of an RVD guy, where you think about, like, us seeing all the highlights on Twitter and the internet going into Ricochet joining WWE, and it makes for, I mean, just eye-popping highlights. And that's kind of the same thing with RVD, you know, from ECW going into WWF. But then when you're seeing them week to week, it just is going to make them a little bit less special when you're seeing the things they do on a weekly basis instead of just, you know, these occasional highlights.
Yeah. He also hasn't worked as open of a style as AEW is in years, because he's worked WWE style. He's still doing the True. Flippy stuff, but slowed down everything. Yeah. On WWE, they slow him down a little bit. And so that's kind of where I got to the mindset of, is he going to have to, like, break out of this WWE loop where he still does the stuff that made him famous, but he seems like he hasn't kicked it up a gear. Like, even when, you know, him and Ospreay had the match and they ran it back years later, it wasn't anywhere close to what they did before. Now, of course, the guys are older now. That was 8 years ago. But you work a certain style for years and years and years, and you got to kind of break loose of that a little bit.
You know, and I think that's probably the issue with this match, is that it wasn't a Ricochet match. They didn't work it at the pace they probably should have, considering its spot in the card and what had come before it and what was coming. And I lost my train of thought there. Shoot. But it was they had a Takeshita match. They didn't have a Ricochet match, you know, which is sensible. Takeshita's the champion. I think he's the one that we'd all prefer see get that boost rather than Ricochet right now.
Mm-hmm. This probably should have opened the show.
Agree. Yeah. They probably could have done with less time and a faster pace.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think to your point, just slowing it down, there's the kind of the contrast in styles. He just probably doesn't match well with Takeshita.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about Daniel Garcia, because here's a guy who we've had just kind of contrasting opinions on, I feel like, on the pod a bit in the past. I said, I don't know, maybe a year ago on the pod that I thought he was a really good wrestler, but he was kind of missing something on the character side. And I think over the summer, they got that going, you know, being out there with MJF and everything. I feel like finally, you know, he still does the dancing thing here and there, but I never liked that with him. It's one of those things that gets over with the crowd, but it's like the dance is over. Is the guy really over kind of thing? And they have done a good job, I think, rebranding him, you know, since he decided to stay with the company. This was the only move here for him to beat Perry for the TNT title. Perry had done everything he could with that title. When Perry got it, it was the right move, but it was clearly time to move on. So I think that this was an easy, easy call going in. I thought the intro video that they made for Garcia was really good.
Yes.
With his mom's voicemails and everything. That was cool. I liked the match a good amount. I thought it was a pretty good match. I think it was longer than it needed to be. It was like 18 minutes or something, 18 and a half minutes. It was nice. It was kind of weird when he celebrated, I thought, just to nitpick, how he kind of went out there with the crowd and he stood up on the ring bearer and then he just stormed out.
Yeah.
It didn't feel as special. I felt like he should have soaked it in maybe a little bit more. But yeah, the match was fine, and I'm glad to see him get this position, because this is kind of the version of Daniel Garcia, you know, when he first came in, that I think we were all pining for, Jesse. And Jesse, you've been a Garcia fan for a long time, so I'll throw it to you. Your thoughts on the match and him getting this title.
Match ran a little too long, but yes, he absolutely should be the AEW TNT champion right now. I think this is kind of nitpicking as well, AEW, and something I wish that they would do more is, you mentioned the Garcia celebration and it being kind of, you ran into the crowd. We didn't, for the rest of the night, they didn't go back to that moment. They just immediately moved on to the next thing. They immediately move on to the next thing and don't go back to some significant points in the show. I wish they would slow it down just a little bit and highlight what has happened, because this should have been a bigger deal and it wasn't. So yeah, I think the match as a whole was, it was good, but it also came after match of the night too. So the crowd was in a lull, and that happens. It's a death spot. It's hard. And they did what they could to get the crowd back. I mean, the pop was fine, but you wanted something more. Maybe you could have placed that again also earlier in the card. That could have opened the show, get the crowd happy, get the crowd excited. Maybe that would have changed the course of the show. So yeah, absolutely the right move though. So props, we'll see what he can do. Unfortunately, he's not going to be defending the TNT title too much here in the next month because he's entering the C2.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Justin, thoughts?
Boy, I like this match a lot more than other people. Part of it was because, you know, it started off slow because of, you know, they put this in the death spot instead of a women's match. Jesse, I'm sure you appreciated that. It did have a little bit of a buffer with the champagne celebration. But it was also kind of a good companion piece to the match that preceded it, and that this felt like a very old school match where it was more about the characters. You had the heel who is up his own ass, and you had the baby face who is in his own head, you know, with the lack of confidence in the way they laid it out. I thought they had a lot of good stuff. The interaction with Matt Menard, who, yes, I agree, Carl, maybe not the best on commentary, but I think he played a good role in the match to give Raven Boy some extra heat. The spot with the table and the 10 count was really good. But just the fact, like I said, the way it was such an inverse of the more new school, fast-paced, you know, high-octane moves of Fletcher and Ospreay, this felt like a nice companion piece. And the fact that Garcia got the win was a very pleasant surprise to me, who had thought for sure Raven Boy was going to come out as TNT champion. Now, the most important thing we need to talk about, and let's carve out the next 3 hours to get this covered, boys, sharpshooter. Let's talk about it. What makes a sharpshooter?
Having the proper leg positioning, for one, because back when Rock would do it, he'd just tuck both legs under his one shoulder. Like, that's not the sharpshooter.
Okay.
It's like a modified Boston Crab kind of thing.
Exactly. So at the risk of being too big of freaking nerds right now, that's the whole thing about the sharpshooter, is that it's technically a Boston Crab, but when you have that extra leverage with the 1 foot hooked underneath the arm, that's going to pull on the leg. So you're putting pressure on the back and the leg. That's what makes it unique. That's what makes it a sharpshooter. That's why the Rock sucks. And that's why, at the very least, Garcia's is passable. Did he stand up a little bit too much at the start? Yes, but that makes it even more meaningful when he cinches it in at the end.
It's almost, go ahead, Ryan.
You go ahead. You can go. It's fine.
It's almost Walls of Jericho-esque, where he sits into it towards the tail end for more impact and pressure.
Builds
on the
back.
Yeah, and he's been doing this move for a couple of years. I actually went back and searched some highlights on Twitter just because after the comment was made about his sharpshooter. So he's been doing this for a while. I mean, he's always been one of the more lauded technical wrestlers on the independent scene before he came here. I mean, look at his history in ROH with the pure matches with Yuta and Shibata. So I mean, yeah, I mean, if anybody can execute a sharpshooter, I'm assuming Daniel Garcia can.
Yeah, we love you, Papa Huffman, but I did not agree with this take in the Facebook group. Yeah, I mean, the other thing that makes it is actually sitting back, because we've seen a lot of guys who will lock in the sharpshooter and they just like they kind of sit back, but they're leaning forward, so it doesn't look like it hurts at all. And he actually sits back on it, and he's always kind of done this modified sharpshooter. Like, he's done it with a bridge before. This, the one last night, like, what did he do? He grabbed underneath his legs and like kind of like held it with two hands. That was, I like that he puts that kind of unique twist on it and makes it his own. He's still doing a sharpshooter, but he modifies it a little bit to make it unique. And so I like, it looked painful. And that's what I want out of a sharpshooter. And I thought it was, well, I think I always have thought Garcia does one of the better sharpshooters for sure.
Thank you everybody for joining our TED Talk.
Yes. Now two hours and 50 minutes more of this. Let's keep going. No. we're now gonna do some side by sides of different sharpshooters over the years.
Hey, that'd be a good PowerPoint Patreon.
There we go.
Just a show on the comparing everyone's sharpshooters and Scorpion Deathlocks.
One spot that made me laugh real quick though was when Perry brought the TNT title into the ring and was going to get himself disqualified. I laughed and I literally said, does Rick Knox know how to disqualify anybody?
Got to use it first.
That's the wrong referee to do anything to call for a disqualification. Cause he's always known for being scatterbrained and just letting everything go.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought that this one was better than Takeshita and Ricochet. I have it scored higher than that match. It was a decent match. Before this, I believe, is when they had the Mariah May segment. Yes. Now, this could have been on Dynamite. Look, I'm not going to complain about seeing Mariah May on a pay-per-view, but they could have done this on TV. This probably was taking up time that didn't need to be on a pay-per-view show. That said, I mean, what happened was, it makes sense given Mariah May's character and turning on people that she supposedly is very close with. I was expecting, like a lot of people, Toni Storm to come out, but instead we got her turning on Mina. I thought, you know, it was well done. The spot off of the table looked pretty brutal. How they like slid off of one when they go off of the stage onto one table, kind of like bounced off of that one and then through another that actually broke. And then Mina doing the blood spot, you know, with Mariah, like Mariah did to Toni, where she's bloody and she kisses her on the forehead and all of that, you know, going berserk. Because if you didn't see it, they were celebrating, doing the champagne celebration. And then Mariah was going to bash Mina with the champagne bottle, but Mina caught her. And then it all broke down and they got into that fight. Justin, your thoughts here.
It was short and sweet. I'm not going to get upset over it. And frankly, the audience and the viewers needed a quick breather after the Ospreay Fletcher match. So I thought it was well done and probably needed in the pay-per-view. Didn't overstay its welcome.
Yep. Perfectly placed. I thought the table spot was pretty cool. And there hasn't been a more attractive black eye and a champion than Mariah May.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so do you want to go to the match of the night right now, or should we build up to it and cover the other things first and end on Ospreay and Fletcher? Any opinions?
We can probably buzz through the other stuff real quick.
All right, we'll build up to Ospreay and Fletcher, which clearly was the match of the night. You know, we've already talked about the opening two. We'll spend a little more time on MJF and Strong. The tag match that opened, Justin, you said it. It's just Private Party doesn't really feel that over to be tag team champions. They had that first match with the Bucks was really good. I was a big fan of it. I've kind of felt like if they were going to do the title switch, they should have just done it that night rather than running it back the second time and then doing the title switch. I picked Private Party to retain here. I think you could have made the argument for a switch just because the Outrunners are so freaking over in comparison to the Private Party. And that's not going to last forever. Like, it's not a character. It's going to be in 2 years from now, the Outrunners are still going to be super. It's got a time expiration on it, you know? So you could make the argument that, yeah, why not give it to them? You know, they're the most over team out there right now. I guess to the positive of the match is they did use it to continue to build up this turbulence between the Acclaimed with Anthony Bones and Max Caster that's going on and that split that's eventually going to happen. But Jesse, you said it in our text, group text that we've got going on. It's kind of just guys waiting around to hit their spots. Your typical multi-man trope here. Give us your thoughts.
Extremely sloppy too. Yeah. One thing I'll also say is Malachi Black and Brody King are over with that crowd as well. Mm-hmm. So I think long term, you put the tag belts on them. Ooh, let them run with it for a long time. Yeah. Maybe like sometime in the summer. But back to the task at hand here. Yeah, I mean, with what I saw botch-wise with Max Caster letting go of Magnum, one of the outrunners, mid-move, like literally, and it wasn't even a struggle. He just like let him go so they could hit their finisher, and then he ran in the ring and broke it up. I just thought it was terrible. And then when Bowens and Caster were arguing, you can just watch Mark Quinn like kind of getting this itch to like hit the top rope so he can break up the pin, and the pin hadn't even taken place yet. So you got to do something with these camera angles. You have to be patient. I think maybe that's poor agenting or something along those lines. So, I mean, this is this is why I felt this was one of the worst pay-per-view openers in the history of the promotion. And I do think that the tag team division is in some trouble because of everything that's going on in both singles divisions. I mean, now, like, who really cares about the tag division? Because Private Party, again, while some people loved it, we've criticized it. I think rightfully so. So they have a lot of work that needs to be done.
Justin, go ahead.
No, you guys covered it. I don't think we need to spend any more time on this match.
I was trying to see who agented this match, but I don't have that right now. So, yeah, it definitely had its issues. You know, again, I hate to harp on this, but as far as needing tag teams, bring back Daniel Garcia and Hurt Syndicate tag team. Put them in the title picture with Garcia. That would work for me.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No, what do you mean? I agree with Ricky Starks or?
Oh yeah. Ricky Starks. Sorry. Ricky Starks. Now that could work for me, I think.
Starks and Benjamin.
Yeah. Absolutely. Did I say Garcia?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, guys. I need another cup of coffee. yeah. So, MJF and Roderick Strong. All right. So I was texting with another friend during this one. This was Jeremy from BR. And he was like, does everyone have a yellow tone to them tonight? Or is it just my TV? It's like, yeah, something with the lighting and all the yellow from the Full Gear logo or something. It was making people look kind of weird. And MJF's tan, Jesse, you were commenting on, looked very bad. But also just this match was not very good. You would look at it on the surface, MJF, you know, he's been away for a little bit. You're getting him back. You want to be excited about that. Roderick Strong's a good worker. And the match just didn't really click that well for me. I don't know. Again, it wasn't a bad match. It was fine. But to our earlier point of the first two matches, not really living up to pay-per-view expectations, this one was just not that great. It was like a TV match again, mm-hmm. Almost 14 minutes. They gave him some time. Didn't really ever seem to get up into that higher gear for me, though. Justin, I'll throw it to you first.
It's just the epitome of a placeholder match, and we all know that because the end game is MJF and Cole. Nobody's really interested in this, and so why put it on a pay-per-view other than to get, you know, MJF on a pay-per-view? So it was going to be hurt no matter what there, and then to follow the previous match and not really deliver anything especially exciting really hurt it. I thought it was fine. But it's just, you know, it's the middle of something, you know, that's going to be going on a lot longer. And the fact that MJF really hasn't been on TV at all, except for these short clips of him watching these matches from home or wherever he's watching them from. So that hurt it too, just because MJF's not around and it just feels like he has lost something that he had before. I can't exactly put my finger on what it is, but it's something.
I'll just say this real quick. His mic work's not nearly as good as it used to be. It comes across as like the cheapest heat possible, and it's just not creative at all. It's just like when he's getting on the mic now, it's not doing it for me. Jesse?
I agree. I also think that it's maybe the level of the competition. I mean, offense to Roderick Strong as well, because I actually thought Roddy Strong had a pretty good performance in this match in ring, yeah, but that's awesome. Roddy's known for.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. His in-ring work, not his character, because I had no idea about his parents. I mean, they just brought this up Wednesday night. Like, couldn't you have drawn attention to that a month ago if you wanted a little more heat coming into this? So, yeah, I mean, I think because MJF with Punk, MJF with Hangman, I mean, even MJF with Cole, as much as we kind of poo-pooed it during the summer, it was at least it was entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just I think, again, even with Darby, look at the stuff he did with Darby. I mean, that was a tremendous feud. So, yeah, I think it's just a matter of just the investment in the crowd and who he's working with. And I got to say this as well. It could be a little controversial, but with his spray tan on his face, he was about halfway to two-thirds of the way to looking like X-Pac cosplaying Mark Henry in that DX Nation.
Oh, no.
It was that bad and that dark.
Whoever's doing the spray tan backstage needs to get some lessons, you're saying?
Yeah. Big time. And even after the match, when MJF like laid out Roddy and then Adam Cole comes to their from the rescue way too late and Kyle O'Reilly pushes him off and CC, crisis could have been averted if you had just kept your nose out of everything. Yeah, the crowd just wasn't eating it up at all.
So I'm going to shoehorn this point in to piggyback off of yours, Jesse, and I'm shoehorning this in strictly to bring up the fact that Tottenham beat Manchester City 4-0. Yes, yesterday. Yeah, absolutely. But it's the fact that maybe this applies to MJF. Tottenham is the epitome of a team that plays to the level of their competition. The fact that they dominated Man City, who's been the best Premier League team for almost a decade now, but 2 weeks ago, they lost an embarrassment, and that's just been my entire fandom with them. I think MJF might be the same way. I think he plays to the level of his competition. If he's facing a mid-carder in a mid-card story on a pay-per-view, it's probably going to come off that way. You put him against a Danielson or a Punk or even, you know, a Cole to an extent, that's how it's going to feel. It's going to feel like a big deal because he rises to the occasion. So I think that could be a big part of it.
Yeah, Carl in the chat. MJF, with the exception of All In, is just coming in on these pay-per-views, doing a match or angle early in the card, and then off he goes. Seems like he's cashing a check. So are you saying that MJF doesn't elevate talent, Justin?
Not yet. I think he could down the road, but we know for a fact he has no interest in that, considering that the rumor is he turned down putting Swerve over at World's End, and instead they went with Samoa Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was just going to say, he just got paid, and I want to see an MJF Swerve feud because I think that's exactly where he would rise up to the level of his competition. I think the back and forth between those two would be tremendous.
And we all know what happened after that Wardlow feud.
Like, yeah.
3 days later on TV.
Yeah.
Wardlow was dead in his
grass. Completely undercut it. Completely undercut it.
Yeah. All right. So after that, this is where the show turned. On the third match, Mercedes and Statlander, outstanding match for the TBS title. You know, for all of the discussion about Mercedes and her AEW run so far, I mean, this was her third, like, really high-level match in the promotion, I would say. And, you know, we've talked about the character work and stuff and, like, trying to shoehorn her maybe originally as a babyface, finally getting her as a heel, the promos maybe not living up to where they should be. But that being said, in the ring, more often than not, she delivers, and this match was incredible. It was really, really good. I mean, if you look at her three best matches this year in AEW, it's the Willow match at Double or Nothing, and then the one against Vakur at Forbidden Door in June, and this one. And I said in the Facebook group, this is probably like neck and neck with the Willow match, I think. Maybe this might have been her best match, though, in AEW so far. I liked, you know, working over the knee of Statlander. Statlander's got this injured knee. She missed the 450 splash, and she's going after it throughout. Both ladies really brought it here. And this is where, you know, we were texting, and after those first two, we were a little worried about the trajectory of the show. And then pretty much after this, like we said, there was some matches that were like, okay, not bad matches, but pretty much everything the rest of the show was good or great, I thought. Justin?
Yeah, boy, I think this was pretty easily, in my opinion, Mercedes' best AEW match. I did really like the Willow one, but this one felt so important just because of, you know, the first two matches. And I think she desperately needed this showcase of who she is. And obviously, you know, she really benefits from working with ladies who are bigger than her. And it worked incredibly well here. I absolutely loved this match. Part of that maybe just because my expectations were pretty low going into it, considering the run Mercedes has had since winning the TBS title. This should be a feud they build on and have matches for the next year and a half. You know, give me more of these two.
Good for Chris Statlander, by the way, who's, I believe, torn her ACL a couple of times, and being able to come back and work as well as she does. To John's point in the chat with her and Willow being the MVPs of the women's division in AEW, abso-frickin-lutely. I wish we had Athena on AEW TV at some point in time, because, I mean, you could fit her into that same class. But, and also going back to that main event, it was really cool to see Willow come out and attack or kind of defend her group in AEW by attacking Marina Shafir. So we might look at a few with that down the road. That's going to be a lot of fun. But with this match, though, yeah, this is Mercedes' best match in AEW, I think, by a good margin. Getting to see the sweet Hurricane Rana off the apron, a lot of reversals, a cool F5 from Statlander.
I bid on that one. That was a good near fall. Mm-hmm. That modified net breaker she did was really rad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just, I think the chemistry between the two and their reversals looked extremely crisp. And even the ending, which like was slightly off, just a little bit, still looked good. Yeah, I mean, number two or number three match of the night. Again, I think it's between that one and then Mox and Orange in the main event.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, this was the number two match. She bit her leg, Jesse.
Yes.
Bit her leg.
Yeah. No, I love that part.
Yeah,
it was
awesome.
Yes, it was the slingshot off the ropes, which was just, like I said, a touch clunky, but mm-hmm. still, I mean, very good match.
Yeah. Let's keep it rolling because we're already at an hour in. But yeah, I really, really like this. This was second best match of the night to me. And they followed that with Jay White and Hangman, which is another one that I had high hopes for. I really liked their match at Wrestle Dream. I thought Hangman was going to win. So them going in and putting over Jay White for the second show in a row surprised me. But that said, I liked what they did with Paige afterwards, where he's got the crazy look in his eye and he's losing his mind and, you know, playing into the character he's had going. He punches out Christopher Daniels on the stage. I don't know if he's going to get suspended and be off TV for that. It would make sense. So, if you're heating up Jay White to possibly face Mox next, this is the way to go. You've got two back-to-back wins over a cornerstone former world champion and Hangman Page. I thought it was neck and neck. I asked in our Facebook group, did you guys like this one or Wrestle Dream better? Because when I was grading the matches for Patreon, I had it with the exact same score. I couldn't remember what I gave the one last month. And then I went back and looked and it was like the exact same star rating. And I was like, should I put this one ahead? Was it a little? I couldn't make the call. I think it was pretty close. Both her matches were very good. Justin, I think you said that you would give this one the nod.
Yeah, it had two things going for it that I think were better than the Wrestle Dream match, and that's the finishing sequence was incredibly exciting, crisp, and well done with all the reversals, and then just an absolute shocker of an outcome. I think a lot of us just assumed it was going to be Hangman, but a very much needed win in some weird way, even though this is his fifth win over Hangman. He's 5-0 now, but as a babyface and a potential, opponent for Mox, a potential challenger, very needed for Jay White. So I was stunned by the outcome, but I thought it was beautifully done. My only criticism of this match was maybe just cut a little bit of its time. But other than that, really enjoyed it.
Back-to-back matches where limb work was key. Like, this was good stuff. Mm-hmm. Both of the guys selling leg injuries. Especially, I think Jay White did a better job with the ankle than Hangman did with the knee. It's good, really good stuff. I think the one thing I would have added on to after Hangman punching CD would have been going right back to Jay White and throwing the ankle lock on. Just to make it even more nuts. Mm. I wanted that so bad. Because then you could really explain just how just deranged that Hangman has become. Because character work, like Carl saying in the chat, he is so good. And this is a guy I wish would have an AEW world title run sooner rather than later. And I think he's going to be pushed to the back for now, just because there's so much talent there. But yeah, Justin, I'm going to echo all your sentiments. Tremendous stuff. The chemistry these two have it's up there in AEW. Very good match.
I'm just going to put this out there real quick. I don't think it would work for multiple reasons, and I don't want them to do this, but Ryan mentioning, you know, will Hangman get suspended for hitting Christopher Daniels? We know the Young Bucks are gone already. Omega might not be coming until after the new year. You know, are we looking at potentially, you know, the Elite showing up to challenge the Death Riders until we can eventually get to Darby? I don't want that for one. I'm not going to buy the Young Bucks as baby faces right now. And I would prefer Omega to work on his own. But after you said that thought immediately popped in my head, is that what we're working towards here with the story?
Yeah. Well, there's a report out there yesterday that Omega might actually work AEW before that Japan show. Now that there's
put him in the C2.
There's conversations going on, because we had that discussion here, a couple of weeks ago when they announced, when he appeared in Japan, and to build up to that match on January 5th at the joint show with New Japan, that was going to be his first match back. But now apparently there's discussions he might actually wrestle in AEW before that. So Omega's going to be back in the mix. And I do think they're in this situation just with the storytelling where they might have to remove some of their top guys from TV just based on what's happening. So, like, you know, we talked a lot about ticket sales and everything. But like, just from a logical perspective, Paige should get suspended because he nailed Daniels here. Then you got to have him off TV. We're about to talk about Ospreay, but it would make sense to have Ospreay off TV for a few weeks, given that match and what happened. So you're removing two pretty big names there, but look, if you do get Omega back in the mix here before too long, that'll make up for it. I agree with you, Justin, that I'd rather have him doing his own thing though than working with the Elite.
Excalibur made the point on the Countdown show, which I alluded to as well on Unplugged, is that a lot of the larger names right now are tied into different feuds, so they're not necessarily coming to the defense of AEW against the Death Riders. So I think this might be strategically done.
Mm-hmm.
So
great call.
Yeah,
I noticed that comment too. Yeah.
All right, let's bring it home with the match of the night: Kyle Fletcher, Will Ospreay. Just can't say enough about this match. It was so good. I think everything about the way they presented this. First of all, let's talk about Kyle Fletcher's entrance and the crown. I mean, that was tremendous presentation, I thought. Ospreay comes out in, he was wearing all black. It's like a kind of a Punisher version of the GOAT logo, it looked like. Man, you know, this is another one of those situations where going in, you got to put over Kyle Fletcher here. I understand that Ospreay is a guy we all want to be world champion, but I also feel like he's already a made guy, even though he hasn't been world champion. People see him as one of the top guys in the company. Kyle Fletcher, no, but he's a guy we have talked about on the pod for a couple of years as being outstanding in the ring, needing that character piece. And I think after this match with Will Ospreay, Kyle Fletcher's a made man. He absolutely is. This was the right call. He looked dominant. Oh my God. Some of the spots in this match, the brainbuster on the outside. And then the finish. I didn't expect that. He goes up top. You think you're going to see a superplex or something. Then does the brainbuster on the turnbuckle, which was like, it just kind of came out of nowhere. And I practically jumped out of my seat. Oh my God. That was incredible. I mean, all the stuff they did on the ring apron, of course. I mean, just throughout the whole match, this is a match of the year contender. This is in your top three or four matches in AEW this year. And Fletcher comes out looking like $1 million. And this is a guy now who they've got this show in February in Australia, his home country, where if they play this right, he can be the face of that show. I mean, he just beat Will Ospreay clean on a major pay-per-view. So I'll let you guys jump in here. But like I said, from the presentation to the moves themselves, to the finish, it's the right call all the way around. Love the match so much, Justin.
Yeah. So first and foremost for me is that I sure hope they got a plan in place for Kyle Fletcher. Because anybody who's worried about, you know, Ospreay losing again, well, he's lost to Swerve once. He's lost to MJF once. he's okay, everybody. Let's all calm down. But, you know, I can't help but think about Takeshita and Omega from last year at All Out and how it basically kind of took a year after that match for Takeshita to really start finding himself and really start feeling like a big deal. I'm just worried that we're going to see that same trajectory with Fletcher. So my entire thing with this match is I hope they have a plan in place. I hope they know what they're going to do with Fletcher for at least the next 6 months, that there is an end game with him. I don't expect that to be a world championship, but it's got to be like the international or maybe just even an amazing performance in the C2. It's got to be something big to really play off of this match and make it truly mean something in retrospect. Other than that, you know, amazing match. You know, everything that Ryan said. But let's throw it to the true number one Bruv fan, Jesse.
What did El Generico name that finisher in ROH? That's my first question.
Oh, I don't remember.
Can't remember.
Because he used it at WrestleMania to defeat Gunther. That thing is vicious.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Oh, and then Ospreay sold it to absolute perfection. And I see John's point to anybody moaning that Ospreay doesn't sell needs to watch this match. He's been doing a much better job recently of that. Yeah, I think this is the perfect stepping stone for Kyle Fletcher. Like Justin said, you got to move. You got to move on him now. Mm-hmm. Oh, I think there's a couple of things here. There was a spot where a super kick from Kyle Fletcher, and then all of a sudden Ospreay reverses it and hits this ridiculously blue thunder bomb for a two. Kyle Fletcher knows Will so well that he countered an Os Cutter into a tremendous neck breaker and a Keith Lee spirit bomb for a two. Oh my heavens. Yeah. I mean, with that, and then Ospreay skinning the cat, and then landing a tombstone to the outside, then the tombstone from Fletcher on the steel steps. That was just, yeah. Oh,
I was worried.
Man.
He looked pretty low when he was setting that up. I was worried about that watching it. Yeah.
I was cringing for sure. Yeah. So how Kyle's able to do that. And like Andrew said, there's a lot of trust between these two men because Will's not doing this for just anybody. Kyle Fletcher is one of his best friends. He knows that there's talent there. So, and then, I'm going to spin this to Swerve and Will Ospreay both losing last night. Now it's time for them to just start winning left and right, left and right for about 9 months to a year.
Same with Hangman.
Yeah. Oh, I've been saying that tune for quite a long time as well. So, yeah, hopefully Tony recognizes this because it's time for those guys to, I think, lead this company, tie it all together. But, yeah. And then with Kyle Fletcher, where in the world do you go? Do you have him? I was just going to say that, John. Do you have him beat Okada in the C2, win the C2, and he runs with that? I mean, there's just so many things that you can do, but you can't do what you did, like Justin said, with Konosuke Takeshita, and just stop, start.
Real quick, just a macro view on perhaps why I'm higher on this pay-per-view than others, to your point, Jesse, about like, you know, Swerve lost, Ospreay lost, Hangman lost. These are guys who should very rarely ever lose, and hopefully they go on a long winning streak from here out. That's why I love this pay-per-view so much, is that we got our usual, you know, 4+ star matches that we always see on these AEW pay-per-views. But unlike a lot of them, the outcomes felt very consequential to what we're going to be seeing going forward. And it's really, really piqued my curiosity as to what they're going to be giving us going forward.
Very heel heavy last night. When I was lining up my predictions, I was like, that's a lot of heels I have going over. But Tony apparently agreed with us. So B+ final grade.
Yeah, John mentioned it in the chat, free him up to fight Omega. I mean, they had a match on Dynamite a little bit over a year ago that was awesome, Fletcher and Omega. So I'd love to see them. They've been in some multi-mans too, but that singles match, I think it was in October last year on Dynamite, was outstanding. I would love to see him face a returning Omega at some point. But again, he's a made guy. And we could also talk about Ospreay and how generous he has been in these losing situations. You know, contrast that with what you said earlier about MJF not wanting to lose to Swerve. Look at Ospreay. Like, he proposed the match. That was not even Tony Khan's idea. He proposed the match to do with Swerve in the summertime to lose to him at Forbidden Door at a time when everybody was it was kind of an awkward situation because like we like Swerve so much, but like Ospreay was on this meteoric rise and he wanted to prove to everybody that he was a team player and it was Swerve's time. And so he lost to him clean. He lost to MJF. I'm sure here he wanted to lose to him because to mm-hmm. Fletcher, because you know their history together. He's his guy. He wants to make him. So he puts him over in the strongest way possible, totally clean. You know, it's a heel going over, but not a bullshit finish by any means.
Yeah.
Could not have been more perfect. This is one of those handful of matches people will talk about in the match of the year conversations in January, I think.
Currently my number two or three Ospreay match of the year.
Yeah. It's up there. I mean, it's outstanding. If you haven't seen it, you need to watch it because yeah. this was worth the price alone, I thought.
My favorite was real quick, just Trevor Dame's take on Blue Sky is that Ospreay is now kind of the spiritual successor to Danielson of making us believe he's actually paralyzed during the match and also insisting on always putting other people over to his own detriment.
Yes. No kidding.
God love him.
He can be pushed to the top any given time yeah, he agreed. Wants. That's how good he is. So kudos to his selfless ways.
Yeah. Guys, it's a lot of fun. Appreciate you all tuning in, especially across the pond. You know, usually we record late on Thursday nights and we can't get our friends from the UK here. So it's great to see some of those names like Carl and John in particular joining us from across the pond. But everyone else, you know, that was here, Andrew, always appreciate you. I see Alan in the chat and everyone that's catching this on demand, podcast feed, video, wherever. Make sure you get in our Facebook group. Talking Pro Wrestling. It's been a little more active of late. Justin's really been active in the group and appreciate that. Jesse as well. And yeah, it's an exciting time to be following wrestling. We're gonna be talking Survivor Series next weekend. Show's got a lot of hype too. Justin,
what a SmackDown.
Wait.
Holy shit. Am I praising a WWE product? What a fucking SmackDown.
Yeah, we'll be talking about all of that on our next flagship. We are not gonna be doing a show Thursday night, you guys, because it is Thanksgiving. So the next time we're on the air for the flagship will be the Survivor Series review a week from now. But we will be doing that. Maybe it'll be a bonus show or something in between. You'll have to stay tuned on Patreon. But yeah, that's the best way to support us. Head on over to Patreon. You're going to want to hear the next classics. I will just say that. Jesse.
Ryan, I'm going to make you happy before you go. Bears 17, Vikings 14.
I don't know, man.
He's been beaten in Chicago. Down. He's too hurt. He can't open his heart to this team anymore.
Don't. Oh my God. If they don't give up the Hail Mary in Washington, which should not have ever happened, and if they make the field goal last week, the Bears are the sixth seed right now in the playoffs. Those two plays.
If the Bears would have won last week, I would have taken the Vikings this week. But it's the other way around.
I did like the game that was called by our new offensive coordinator. I mean, the offense looked really good. It's just Matt Eberflus costing them in the game-winning situations yet again. So, I don't know. The Bears usually play the Vikings pretty well in Chicago. So, it does have that going for it. But, man, I don't know. They've had issues with the head coach this year. Who could have ever guessed? Who could have ever said they should have hired Jim Harbaugh? Who knew? Except for the whole fan base.
Carl, we'll ship me one of those Guinnesses.
Yes, please.
I'll pay the freight. Yes.
Yeah, because Guinness is better over there, right? Isn't that the deal?
Oh, that's all I've heard.
Mm-hmm. All right, boys, we're going to watch some football. I got a dance performance to go to this afternoon too, Jesse, so I'm only going to see the first half live, so no spoilers on our text.
Do you want to build a snowman?
It's not Frozen, though. I'll have to go to the joint residence, take that one in. I'll expect a live performance from Justin.
There we go.
We're at his house later. All right, everybody. Appreciate you all. Have a good week. Talk to you again real soon. Shattered from the big stage, shots off. Get up, round of the problem, the gallop of all you. When I'm letting out my cage, I'm hard up and I'm channeling my brain. They might say that you were my little light brain, but it's all fake, cause you were finished by my blade.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.